Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, Paul, is that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, I thought, what's the catch?
Yeah, but after talking to them, it all made sense, right? Because there isn't one!
You got me!
Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt.
You are right, my friend.
And they cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you and to all their users.
I'm living in a cell phone dead zone, but not anymore thanks to Mint Mobile. You can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages.
Because Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
Uh-huh, and you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number, isn't that convenient, along with all your existing contacts.
Ditch those overpriced wirelesses with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month.
Yeah, so to get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's my last name, R-U-S-T.
That's mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's your last name, R-U-S-T.
So cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's me.
New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I just want to say as we close this ad out, there were no edits. We nailed this.
Nailed it.
It's like we were on a Mint Mobile phone call.
Beautiful.
I don't like blood and guts, but I love them when they're lengthily discussed. Cause nothing's more relaxing than the cries of death and lust. So spend a
welcome to the final installment in the Hannibal Lecter series. the longest installment, maybe? Is it?
This sure one that we felt just like it. Ooh, it felt like it. Hey, I don't want to bury the lead. This has been the best movie we've ever watched on the podcast.
100%.
Hannibal Rising, number one film.
Why did we wait this long?
We should have our heads examined like Hannibal Lecter needs his head examined.
We should have our heads examined like Hannibal Lecter never actually examined psychologically the heads of anyone in this movie. When does he go on to become a psychiatrist?
I know. I really wanted a couple psych out scenes where Lecter's like, don't you think it would be better if you stabbed yourself? And the person's like, yes. Lecter, master, you know, like do some, because they're, you know, they're dumb Nazi war criminals. Their whole thing is that their brains can be easily conditioned.
Absolutely.
He should have been easily just to throw a little sand in their eyes.
This is just
convince them that they're ballerinas. That'd be pretty funny, huh? Like more like a hypnotist gag.
Convince them that they're flautists to find out which one of them is bad enough and rude enough to eat.
Oh, I love the origins of rudeness.
Oh my God.
What he considers rude.
Eating his little sister.
Eating his little sister, yeah, is where he goes, that's too far.
Too far. You've got, oh my God. Well, this is just a taste of what you're in for today.
So to speak.
With Gourley and Rust. I'm Matt Gourley.
I'm Paul Rust. Matt, this is with Gourley and Rust.
Mm-hmm.
We like to sit back, have an easy listening type of conversation about movies that can be quite brutal.
That's right. Brutal in their graphic violence, brutal in their themes, or brutal in what you have to sit through at length to watch.
That's right.
In this case.
And we scoop up, you know, new listeners who maybe come because they're like, ooh, I love Silence of the Lambs. I love Manhunter. I'm going to get on board. How many people do you think just joined the Rising Heads?
I can't imagine there's even one, so I don't even feel like we need to cover business other than to say we'll be hitting the baby xenomorphs later in this episode. And stay tuned for the end because we'll be announcing our picks for the Mishmash Slasher Bash season coming next.
Oh boy. So you got three, I got three. And another announcement, people can listen to the commentary for this month. On the patreon.com/withGourleyandRust, the commentary for Friday the 13th part
3D. It's the third film. It's three dimensions. It's Paul's pick, but it's my pleasure.
I think we'll be in three dimensions when we see it.
I think we
more.
Yeah, I think we will be. Maybe more.
At least
we'll be a Tesseract.
Oh man. Have you ever found yourself in the Tesseract?
Not so as I can remember. How about you?
I think I went into it once. I was looking for a store. It was kind of like when you walk into one of those places and it's like a mob front. You're like, oh yeah, they're not really here to do business. That happened to me once with a Tesseract. I was walking in looking for some new shoes, and then I found myself pushing dusty books off a shelf in Interstellar.
Oh, God.
Now, Matt, have you seen Oppenheimer, the Best Picture winner? Have you seen it yet?
I did. We finally got to watch it about a month ago.
Okay. I bring it up because, you know, the Interstellar
and the
Oppenheimer.
Oscars. Yeah, Oscars, too.
And the Oscars,
just
too.
The big winner at the Oscars, yeah.
So you got to watch the Oscars and be like, have an opinion. You could be like, yay,
suppose,
best picture,
yeah.
Yay, best picture.
Yeah.
What did you think of the Oscars?
You know, it was a Nolan film for me in that, like, I never count it wasted time to watch a Nolan movie, mm-hmm. except for maybe Tenet.
But that's okay, because you can run your viewing experience backwards and have never watched it.
I have
it.
Yet to do that, and maybe that will help, but...
No, I just mean you viewing it, you can rewind your life, like, click style.
That's what I mean, oh, okay. I wish.
You can do that.
You know, Oppenheimer was amazing and great, but I always find his films lack a little bit of heart or soul or humor, maybe, is something that they're a little impersonal in a way that leaves me kind of like meeting it as far as I can go. Mm-hmm. I don't know. About where did you come down? How'd you like it? It's Hannibal Rising.
The last time, you know, I saw it was in the Barbenheimer weekend. So that was the last time I saw it. I remember when I walked out of it, the thing that I most remember, I think, was thinking, oh, I've never seen a movie edited that way. I mean, it was just the first response anybody probably would have, but I was
amazing.
Just, I haven't seen a movie edited that way. And I was like shocked that it could sustain that. Like, I was like, wow, that whatever that kind of Goodfellas,
right?
Like a movie that can like set its own kind of pattern and then like keep it up is like really impressive.
I wish I would have seen it on the big screen, because I had to watch it on Max, and also I watched it so late in the game that I think it had been hyped so heavily. So it's probably not fair. I watched the first Dune on TV, and then I saw the second Dune. Amanda and I actually got out to see the second Dune.
You got to see Dune Tune.
Dune Tune. I liked the first Dune a lot. But man, seeing that second one on the big screen, having a Dune spiced cocktail that they served at AMC in the middle of the day.
Yay, buddy.
Great.
Was there a little sandworm floating in it?
No, but I guess they have these sandworm popcorn buckets that are highly vaginal.
Oh, I've seen those. Vagina dentata.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No for me. That's a no for me. So that's fun. You got to go and see. I haven't seen either of the Dunes.
Really? I'm surprised.
The only Dunes I've been seeing are the Lorna Dunes going into my mouth.
Hello, this guy. He's huge. Like a sandworm. Why have you not seen a Dune?
The first time the Dune...
Have you seen the Lynch Dune?
I've not even seen the Lynch Dune.
I watched that for the first time not long ago.
What'd you think?
It's batshit crazy. It's enjoyable in its own way. And I felt like after I'd watched it, nothing was spoiled. Because it was so unintelligible.
Yes. How did it compare to the medieval movie we watched that one time?
Crawl,
yeah.
It's got some.
It feels like they
shared
run in parallel,
DNA.
Yeah.
Even the new Dune is really throwing back to 80s fantasy costumes and tropes too of the love triangle between like who they have to marry and who they want to marry and that kind of melodrama that is such a staple of 80s fantasy films.
Yeah, I also noticed so many 80s teen movies, like rewatching them, a lot of them is the boy has a girl that he should be with, but he sees her as a friend, and there's a girl that he's got a boner for, and he chases that girl the whole time, and then he comes around in real life. That's like... In every, it's in the new Dune movie.
Yes, it is. But still, explain yourself.
I missed the first Dune, I think, because would have been.
It was October of 2021, I remember, because I watched it right after Glenn was born.
Yeah.
So in the middle of the night, I watched it in two nights.
Something ding dong happened, and I missed the IMAX thing. I was like,
yeah. I wish they would have put it back out for this.
That's what I was hoping for. That's what I was hoping for. Now, what I'm now hoping for is that in a year, they'll just do a thing like you know how IMAX...
I don't know.
They don't have IMAX movies to show, like in...
I don't know. I wouldn't depend on Warner Brothers for anything logical.
Yeah, that's true.
You'd better get out and see
Maybe it. I should scoop it up.
Yeah,
but there's still a couple movies I haven't seen yet that I might even want to see before.
Like what?
I haven't seen Zone of Interest.
I haven't either, or Poor Things.
I saw Poor Things. I loved it.
Yeah.
That was a cool afternoon screening for me because it was a President's Day, middle of the afternoon. My wife and I went, and we went to the theater, and it was sold out in the middle of the day. And it was fun to be like,
oh yeah,
hey, everybody's getting together to watch a weird movie. And that was fun. I liked I really enjoyed Poor Things quite a bit. It gives me the same tickle as like what I used to get when I watched Tim Burton movies when I was a little boy.
So it's like an adult Tim Burton.
Exactly. That's what I've been telling people. It's like Tim Burton already can be a little perverse, but this is like no subtext perverse.
Right.
Tim Burton. Dirty Tim Burton.
Okay. I love it.
Yeah. But what would now with 2023 in your rearview mirror, do you got a fave movie?
That's a good question. Why have I not asked myself? Because I really enjoyed the Oscars this time.
Oh, yeah. They were fun.
I don't know. Oh.
Yeah, out of those...
I'm trying to think. I mean, I liked Anatomy of a Fall, but it doesn't feel quite monumental enough to be Best Picture.
I saw that as well.
Maybe I'd go Killers of the Flower Moon, the snubbed Killers of the Flower Moon.
Right
even
on.
Though, like, I would consider that not lesser Scorsese, but...
What about The Killer of No Flower Moon?
That one left me a little cold. As it probably was supposed to. I enjoyed it. What did I really like this year? I don't know.
No, I mean, you seem like you saw a lot of... that's why I'm waiting for Zone of Interest. Because for a lot of people, they're like, oh, that was my favorite movie last year.
I bet
so
it will be mine.
To hold my tongue.
But I'm just like, feel like I need to steel myself to watch it.
My favorite so far, I think, is Bo is Afraid.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
That's the one I'm like, oh, in 10 years, I'll like think back on what a wild movie that was.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah. And how much it's really just, you know, a movie is says something if, like, the next day you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
It says even more if it's the next week and you're thinking about it. But when it's
nine months,
I'm still thinking things over in my head. It's a fun.
That's saying something. Do you think you'll be thinking about Hannibal Rising in 7 months, 8 months?
Clearly, I didn't want to think about it in the last 10 minutes because I've been avoiding talking about it.
Well, I have very few notes on this film, meaning, like, I have a lot of notes for this film.
Yes.
Very few discussion comments because I just watched it. Nothing was really enthralling me enough to write it down bad or good. But as a whole, yeah, I think it's clear. A strange movie that when you know that it was just forced into production by Dino De Laurentiis, that's all I can think about. It just feels like this is like materialized Dino De Laurentiis bullying. Because Thomas Harris was approached, thank you again to Brantley's amazing notes.
Brantley Palmer, woo!
He was approached, maybe approached is too ginger a term. He was threatened, that's not true, by Dino De Laurentiis saying, either write this story, the novel or the screenplay, or I'm going to do it myself because I have the rights. And Thomas Harris seems like he was bullied into writing this story that is interesting in itself, but, like, not a compelling thriller or horror movie, and certainly not in its production. And, you know,
yeah, the idea that it's not a passion project of somebody's where they were like, I need to tell this story about Hannibal and his risings. It does make it seem like it was, it does feel like a product.
But speaking of passion, I learned in Brantley's notes, and I had no idea about this, that Anthony Hopkins wrote his own Hannibal Lecter script.
I saw that, and I read that too, and I didn't read the script. That's what I meant. I would love to read do a reading of Anthony Hopkins' Hannibal 2 script, because you know
it's Hannibal 2?
Oh.
I think it's after Hannibal.
Hannibal Rising.
Yeah, so it's like Hannibal.
Hannibal T-O-O?
Yeah, it would have to be, because it can't even be 3, even though Red Dragon says prequel.
Right.
Oh.
Because that would be like, I'd love to read it, because I bet it's like anybody who writes something tailored for themselves.
Yeah.
So it would be like, Hannibal walks in looking lean, cool, sophisticated, possibly his most sophisticated and cool he's looked ever.
What if it was the most ridiculous vanity project where Hannibal saunters into the room, every female and most of the male heads turn in lust and desire?
Now, I got tricked because when I looked up Hannibal Rising online and I looked at the cast list, it said Anthony Hopkins, Hannibal Lecter, but it must have just been a cross-section algorithm.
Oh, weird. Well, originally he was going to be bookends in this movie, but they got...
Imagine my disappointment, man. I'm waiting until the end of the movie.
Oh.
I didn't get the first part, so I'm like, is this truly going to end with him just like... closing a book and be like, that was my tale.
It would have made sense if they did do a little Hannibal, like Anthony Hopkins ending where he gets the final guy later in life, you know?
Yes. Yes. And somehow weaved whatever happened at the end of Hannibal in there. Just give a little suggestion, you know? Like he still has his hand cut off, you know. I guess his hand would be cut off.
Oh, that's right. I forgot all about
it. It's interesting that they went the prequel route because Hannibal's still living out there. He's still existing in this world.
Yeah, but I guess he didn't want to do anymore. That's why they went this way. Was there any...
Could there be? I mean, Jonathan Demme's passed away.
No, we talked about this. Like, I'm surprised there hasn't been a like prestige legacy sequel to this with Clarice and... Hopkins. I think Jodie Foster would still be the holdout.
Well,
and wisely so.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, this is where the I thought of it's an interesting thing that for the Hannibal Lecter series, the less he appears in the movie, the better it is. And the more he appears in the movie,
that's
the worse
true.
It is. It's like, wow, what a... It'd be like if that was true of James Bond or something. You're like, the less James Bond is in the movie, the movies are better. That's a preposterous thing to say. But yeah, like, the only difference is he might have a little less time in Manhunter than Silence of the Lambs, and I like Silence of the Lambs more, but outside of that, it's basically a perfect one-to-one of, like...
And this is the only movie where he is 100% the lead character.
Yeah. And they mess up... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, they mess up the whatever that cool... You could see it as maybe like, there is a formula and they're messy with the formula, but they don't mess with it in a way that takes the other things into account. Because usually with the setup, Manhunter, Silence of the Lambs, Red Dragon, Hannibal as well, with like the Gary Oldman character, it's a triumvirate or whatever. It's like a three thing setup of... Detective, Inspector, Hannibal, who that inspector goes to get help, about a third person who's the real baddie.
Right.
Whether that's like the Tooth Fairy, or he's worse than Lecter.
Yeah.
Even if that's just because he's not in jail. So
Reese,
it's like
Reese Ephens in this case. Yeah.
So in this time, it's him. Now, it gets mixed up because it would have been better, I don't know, if the inspector character... You see it through his eyes.
Yes. Like he's, no, you're right. It would have been better.
He's a Nuremberg trial attorney who now is like established. And then he goes in and starts seeing these weird cannibalism things happening. And he starts suspecting the boy who's around the crime scene. And now, because then they get to it like 30 minutes left of the movie. He's like, I need your help. And you're like, well, that's what it should have been. Is like, he knows this boy probably knew those war criminals, or, you know, and now he's pushing him and he's pushing him to get closer to the guys so they can both nab the person they want. But then it gets really mixed up when you just pull Hannibal forward in front of the line and then everybody else gets to the back and then that inspector doesn't show up until like a half hour in. You're like, well, I don't care. He's not the lead.
Yeah. And I think all the casting in this is so... on the nose and melodramatic. Even, you know, rest in peace to the actor Gaspard Ulliez or whatever who plays Hannibal. He died in a skiing accident in 2022. He's just a little too sinister, you know, but without the kind of charm.
I know. I was like, where's the charm in all these kills? You don't see like a twinkle. And he kind of like the way they set things up, he just always looks like a twerp. Like, they'll have these huge, and I'm a twerp, so, you know, but like, it's like they'll have like a war criminal and they like, or a Nazi war criminal, he's like established and like huge.
Yeah.
And just, it looks ridiculous when they cut back and forth between them and it's like him and then it turns to this guy who's got like, he looks like his senior photo from high school. He's like all skinny.
I just knew we were in trouble when the first thing you see are these kind of superimposed digital titles that just jump from the screen. But what's going on in the background is like nature and animals. And the font, I was like, is this Jumanji or Jurassic Park? What are we watching? And I knew that it was trouble. Although I will say the cinematography is really good.
Yes, yeah.
And it kind of belies how bad this film is in a way. It almost makes it seem worse because you think you're watching something quality.
Yeah, you know, maybe there's something about that's a necessary component to the Lecter movies is that they have to look sumptuous.
Yeah.
Like the food he eats, like the movie has to like look like a gourmet movie or something. Yeah. Because that's true of all of them. Manhunter, it's actually kind of surprising to think that Ridley Scott had like one of the least visually sumptuous ones. That would be the one that you think he'd go to town. But I felt like too, like, you know how we, with all the slashers, the classics, the Freddies, the Michaels, the Jasons, the Chuckies, they all around installment three or four, five for sure. I mean, we've talked about this all the time. It's like the audience has now changed their position from they connect with the victim on screen to now they like Jason. He's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And you go out, you don't go out to see the new victim movie. You go out to see the new Jason movie. So they have to start reorientating it where, like, if that's where it'll be like, make somebody extra nasty yeah. so that when Jason kills him, you cheer for it rather than feel bad. But it's almost like this is the classy yeah. franchise version of that, which is like yeah. they got themselves into a corner right. where everybody liked Lecter. So then they made him the guy and make everybody he kills such shits. I mean, they had to go to like Nazis who are like, don't slap the prostitutes too hard or we can't sell them.
Nazi cannibals.
Nazi cannibals, yes, who eat your little sister.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that you could make a character worse, right? They actually went as far as you could possibly go.
You're right.
Short of genocide cannibalism.
Yes, they didn't yeah. eat more.
Yeah.
Is maybe a the way
little
they
girl
more.
They ate and they're Nazis. I still don't fully understand why that made Hannibal a cannibal.
I thought that too. And I wondered before they showed the daughter and he was just ravenously like eating the bird. I was like, God, that'd be awesome if like Lecter just became obsessed with like hunting birds. Like yeah. I mean, it just ended there.
Yeah. But see, the thing with his origin is I know it's very cliche to have like a twisted mother or father relationship as to why people are the way they are, but that would make a lot more sense to me than this. I don't see external forces killing a family you love, turning you into a cannibal. I would think it was some ritualistic something about a sustained thing from his childhood, not just one traumatic event. Mm-hmm. It's a weird choice.
You're
and
right.
I never bought it, you know?
Yeah. And it's a dumb thing too, because I doubt most people who are cannibals became that way because they saw another cannibal eat somebody they love. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
you become Jeffrey Dahmer becomes a cannibal because there's some chemical makeup in his brain and then whatever conditions he had when he was born,
right,
like that he was raised around, those two kind of mix in a way that he's like, now I feel powerful when I eat people. With Hannibal, it was kind of like that a lot of it just boiled down to revenge too. It's like,
yeah, because did he eat the big French guy he killed in that meadow?
It's weird because when they showed up and they were like, he made a sauce of that other guy. Like, he cut off his cheeks and there's a sauce. I was like, did he eat them?
Which guy?
The first guy with the first Nazi, the guy with the rope who gets...
Oh,
the,
yeah.
When they find his body later, they're like, oh, he cooked up cheeks and mushrooms in here.
Well, that's right.
It's like,
I guess it's a revenge thing,
it's like... psychologically he's like, I'm gonna make you, but did he eat? And your point about how like they skipped the psychiatry element, the other thing they skipped, it is his foodie.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
they should have been cutting back and forth between medical school and like culinary school.
Exactly
Or there's something about like I could see just almost starving to death in Lithuania in the winter during an occupation, that would make you a cannibal. Because right. you're like, I went through this, like you said, sustained period of hunger, and now I can eat anything I want. At first it started with exotic items and gorging on that, and then my hunger... my whole life I've been trying to fulfill this hunger, so now I got to eat people. Yeah. Like that, it makes such a clear thing. Then it started off as revenge for the thing,
but then he
got
a taste for it. Because you also never learn that he really likes it. You hear he's like, the cheeks are good, but someone's talking about animals. And then when he's killing the main bad guy at the end, he just decides to go in for more. So I guess we're led to believe like revenge has turned into some kind of sick.
It's a psychopath. Dish best served with guts.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It was a pretty disappointing movie.
It's a bummer to end the season. I mean, I will say there's some pretty solid squib work in the first five minutes of this movie. But other than that.
Yeah, I mean, as far as looking for the good, you're right. all in all looks well shot. And the actors outside of the main character aren't distractingly bad.
Yeah, even Dominic West, his French accent's pretty rough, but I liked a lot of the smaller roles. You know, there's Monsieur Le Petit from Inglourious Bastards is his little assistant in the beginning.
Oh, yes, yes.
Paul Ritter's an actor who's no longer with us anymore, and I really like him, and he plays the prisoner that has to confess before they put his head in the guillotine.
Yeah.
I love that guy. He was in Chernobyl. He was actually in Quantum of Solace in a part that got really whittled down.
Well, and then we can share the info that Brantley had about Casino Royale.
Yeah,
should I read it for the group?
Brantley, you're the best.
This is fantastic. Okay, so Brantley Palmer included in his notes for Hannibal Rising a Casino Royale connection. Daniel Craig joined the cast drinking one night. He was shooting Casino Royale at the same studio in Prague, and he and the cast of Hannibal Rising compared the injuries they received on set. Craig had just had a couple teeth knocked out by a Czech stuntman on the set of Casino Royale.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how that happened. I would imagine he knows Kevin McKidd, who plays the kind of like most sympathetic of the Nazis, the one with the family in the restaurant, and probably Reese Ifans too.
Yeah.
I can't remember if they've been in movies together, but...
Oh, right.
And the little guy's in Layer Cake with him.
Oh, cool. So it's like
maybe
a
that was it.
Reunion.
Yeah.
I mean, I find it hard that a group of young English actors would want to go out drinking.
I know. That's where I gotta... Well, actually, Brantley, we have to fire you, because clearly that's not true.
Yeah, that when I read that, I was like, this is wrong. It's not factual, if anything.
They went out praying.
Or a bridge club, at least. If they're going to do something recreational.
But imagine the discussion where they're like, yeah, we're doing the next Hannibal Lecter movie, so this thing's in the bag. And they're like, I'm the new blonde Bond. Nobody, this guy's going to tank James Bond. That movie's going to be no good. He's busted his teeth.
It'd be funny though, if they were all sitting around, they're like, we're all here because Batman Begins, huh? Everybody's like, yeah. Didn't this seem kind of like a little
reunion,
origin
right?
story, Hannibal Rising?
But there's a bunch of people, the little guy, the little Nazi, the guy who played Joe Chill.
Mm-hmm.
They're both in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, as a snapshot, because Casino Royale was 2007, right?
Six,
okay. But 2007, I remember that year, was when the best pictures, it was basically down to like No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
And at the same time, though, there were movies like Michael Clayton. It was like
maybe one of the best years for movies.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah,
I love Michael Clayton.
If you look at that list of movies, most of them, it is a morally gray, if not evil, like No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood. The big takeaway is like, oh, those were two, Daniel Plainview and then
Anton Chigurh.
Yeah, that those were like two personifications of evil in a movie that you hadn't seen. And people, you know, sort of scratched their chin and was like, why is that? What's going on here? That these two big movies are basically trying to understand. The point is like, you can look at evil and try to make sense of it, but it's just going to be kind of this thing you have to, I don't know what it is. It's like figure out how to wrangle and accept and do, I don't know. But, it's also after a whole 8 years of the Star Wars prequels of trying to like get in the mind of Darth Vader and stuff. I know around like 2007 when all that stuff, people just going like, oh, this has to be Bush administration war on terror stuff.
That was certainly Lucas's idea with those prequels.
Yeah, no. It's like, how did George W. Bush get made? Is basically the question of those.
Yeah.
They, even though the first one's 1999, you can tell he's in dialogue with whatever.
Well, that Bush conservative house too, because he's naming Star Wars characters after Trent Lott,
right? God love him.
And Chris Dodds. Yeah.
Yeah. So. you know, if these movies are roughly being made 2006, they're, but even, you know, I put the James Bond movie, but also the Joker and the next year, Dark Knight, like, to go to the movies was kind of like, I remember just being like, not a bummer, but just being like, wow, people are really into dark shit.
There's
now.
A nihilism with the Joker and also with
and the
V
Dark Knight
for
was
Vendetta.
The cap of the nihilism thing. Where
and
I was
V
like,
for Vendetta, too.
Yes, yeah. When you were sensing that, like this kind of...
For sure. You know when it hit home? Because I was teaching at Riverside College and I had this student that was really nice. I really liked him and we got along, but he really took up the Joker mantle and when kind of like all his, eventually we were friends on social media and all his avatars were him with the Heath Ledger Joker makeup on. And I could tell I wouldn't say an obsession, but a passionate interest that bordered on the uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And it feels like to me, and I don't know what became of this guy. I'm not saying he went this way, but it just felt like the birth of this kind of like, see me, hear me, white male kind of grievance thing that, as we know, has like really poisoned this culture.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not saying like, you know, like this overly woke way of the white males are to blame for everything. I'm just talking about this kind of like Joker thing that took over the country.
You're just acknowledging like what you're seeing, which like it's true. Like I saw this Martin Scorsese, he did a retrospective video like with Vanity Fair, GQ, one of those. And he talked about Taxi Driver and he was like, yeah, when we made Taxi Driver, Travis Bickle was this kind of interesting character. He's like, now every other person in the world is Travis Bickle.
Yeah. Travis Bickle,
like, oh, that
Joker,
is...
Fight Club.
Yeah.
It's all there. Anybody that's like, doesn't get the satire or not satire, but like the message of these movies. And I think it's fair to say Taxi Driver and even Fight Club know what they are, but you know, I look back at The Dark Knight a little bit and I'm kind of like, the message of this movie is not great. And I'm not saying Christopher Nolan's responsible for anything, but I think it's also a little bit believing its own hype so much that I could see why there's no separation of, like, you can sit someone down who's obsessed with Fight Club or Taxi Driver and go, or Goodfellas even, and go like, these are glorifying them in the movie as a kind of satirical way to say, show how absurd they are.
Yeah.
But that's not there in Batman. Like it's there all to be kind of like,
a
loved and adored in a kind of like action way, or at least glorified. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, good or bad. I remember thinking with The Dark Knight Rises, when Bane was like pulling billionaires out of their houses and stuff, I was like, oh, these movies do seem to figure out a way to prime up the audience with the villain doing things you kind of wish you
but they
could
don't
do,
seem
but
like
then
they have a message.
But then it gets messy.
That's
then
what I'm
in
trying
terms,
to say.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
better said. That's what's so weird about those movies is that they tap into themes, the eat the rich resonance and stuff that like a Scorsese movie would handle so deftly, but these are just used for a cause of like a hero versus villain and a
spectacle,
really thin message behind it. Mm-hmm. I still to this day, like every time I watch The Dark Knight, I'm like, so the message is it's okay to do surveillance on people if it's for good. And even Lucius, Morgan Freeman's character, is like, yeah, he has that character in there questioning that. But at the end of the day, it's like a surveillance state, vigilante, above the law person. And I'm not saying I don't understand what Batman is. The problem with Nolan grounding this character so much is that you then have to go, okay, guys, we can't really have a Batman because this is...
Oh, that's it. That's funny. Yeah, you're right. Like, the more you put a superhero into a real world, which was the attempts of those movies, the more that you have to start asking questions about
Why it's a comic book. And when you really make it real, you can't do it believably and actually still root for that character, even though we know Batman is good.
Yeah.
It's a weird movie that actually gets too close to reality. I want to watch it again. I haven't seen it in a while, but it always, like, I always love watching it.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And Heath
Ledger's
amazing.
Yeah.
But it leaves me a little confused every time I watch it.
Well, and you mentioning Joker has got me thinking as, I hear you totally. The Joker and Cruella remakes that happened a few
years.
Not remakes, like the character study of a bad person. It is like, it does feel like the cute kind of JV version of like the 2007 stuff of like There Will Be Blood, and like it's trying to get in the mind of an evil character, but it's like somebody, it's Cruella de Vil and the Joker, you know? But and when those movies came out, I remember talking to a friend who was like, oh, you know, you could compare it to like Madea.
Right.
That it's like, we're going to choose a person who does a... Ooh, you want to talk?
Wow. But finish your thought.
Oh, no. That break. That this is not to your point, but just like where they later became, where you're like watching a full movie about the Joker.
Yeah.
That it's like, it's... history is like rooted far back in like Medea and but the with this new period, well, we can talk about it.
I was just gonna say
like now when you go to movies, you know, in 2007 and 2008, I could watch those movies and be like, hey, There Will Be Blood. It's a guy who's using power and oil to...
Yeah.
Or I should say he's using oil to get power. Right now we're in the middle of two wars that are in the Middle East. Your brain can... The brilliance of that movie is it doesn't make that. It doesn't hit it over the head. You're like, I live in the world.
It's a bonus.
I'm like watching this and I can sense it. Now when you go to movies and you see the zeitgeist kind of like getting funneled through movies, I've noticed it's either the movie is trying to be like, this is how we wish things could be because things are chaotic right now, or it's like the movies just try to represent like chaos now. Good or bad.
I wish I could articulate it better. I feel like I'm right on the same page with you. There's something about it's just enough these days to represent it on screen, not kind of like, I don't want to say teach a lesson, but have a message that really resonates or at least make it satirical. And that's what these Nolan films often do for me. Even Oppenheimer, it's like, yeah, we obviously know Oppenheimer, the minute he built this thing, was conflicted and... But what does the movie really tell us? We already know that, you know? So we just got to see the whole experience from beginning to end. I've never really learned anything other than the political machinations that went on afterwards. I don't know. I don't mean to like...
No. You're
dig
right.
Dig on Nolan because I always like his films.
Yeah. Know? No, I mean, definitely when I'm watching his movies, my enjoyment is coming from the ideas and execution.
Yeah, yeah.
And not the like...
right.
I mean, we've talked about how it's like a... it's hard to hit all three. What is it? The like somebody's just efficient in a craftsperson who can make something. And then the second part is making something...
Oh, fast, cheap, and quality?
Oh.
Those three things?
No, oh. I was just going to say like the hope, like you can have a filmmaker who's... tells interesting stories and makes them very well, but they might not just have this little added that their worldview, they see the world as I see it, and it brings me peace to know that other people think and feel this way.
Right.
Like what I just described is like Martin Scorsese for me. It's like,
yeah,
craftsman, interesting stories told, and then the final like bit of like, and this is how I think or feel about these
in a
things.
Way that it's handled responsibly.
Yeah. I mean, like that ending of that Killers of the Flower Moon was like mind-blowing. And the end of Wolf of Wall Street, they both kind of do the same thing where at the very end, they kind of admit they have to like cop up to like, yeah, I've been doing sort of the...
Yeah.
The movie's been doing this thing that the main character's been doing the whole time, which is kind of like snowing you.
The Dark Knight thing to me is like, I remember leaving, and a lot of people did this, and you actually try to think about the plot and how it all falls apart. And that's often how his themes are for me. They kind of felt tacked on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I need to have a theme and I'll make it this, but it's kind of like... goes against what a lot of the movie is saying. What's interesting mostly...
No,
is,
I hear you. Yeah. Go.
Well, what I'm finding most interesting is that we'll do anything but talk about Hannibal Rising. I got to run outside and talk to a contractor, but we'll take a pee break. And
I'll pee. So anybody, you pee or you talk to your contractor.
Be right back.
With Corley and Ryan.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, Paul, it's that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, I thought, what's the catch?
Yeah, but after talking to them, it all made sense, right? Because there isn't one!
You got me!
Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt.
You are right, my friend.
And they cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you and to all their users.
I'm living in a cell phone dead zone, but not anymore thanks to Mint Mobile. You can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages.
Because Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
Uh-huh. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number. Isn't that convenient? Along with all your existing contacts.
Ditch those overpriced wirelesses with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month.
Yeah, so to get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's my last name, R-U-S-T.
That's mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's your last name, R-U-S-T.
So cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's me.
New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I just want to say, as we close this ad out, there were no edits. We nailed this.
Nailed it.
It's like we were on a Mint Mobile phone call.
Beautiful.
With Corley and Rust.
Okay, so Matt.
Yeah.
I was chatting with the live stream here.
Thank you for doing
and,
that.
And Brantley told us he wanted to clarify Anthony Hopkins' script was a sequel to Hannibal. And Clarice in it kills him.
That's right. That's right. That's in the notes.
Yeah.
Do you think this would have been intended for Julianne Moore or back to Jodie Foster? And
Do a little Connery. Back and forth.
Right. Diamonds are forever.
Yeah.
David Picker of United Artists goes, "We'll pay you whatever you want, Jodie. I want $1 million for the Scottish Boys Fund." You got it. That's an odd choice.
Like, but and
you
I
got
want
it.
A green light for little man Tate
2 and Nell 3 through 4. We're skipping 2.
The Nell quadrology missing one needs to be made.
Hey, has a movie ever gone like the first one and then it goes straight to part 3? And it's like, we'll get to part 2 later.
Ooh. That'd be cool. And then they, so the third part is kind of the prequel for and sequel to the first one.
If they even go to 2, no one, that's just leaving that open.
Yeah, this one goes to 2, they say.
I mean, for fuck's sake, I don't even have that much more to say
about
this.
Yeah, I starred just a couple of the things that seem most interesting.
I'm so glad we're announcing our slasher picks because that gives me something to kind of like
ruminate
talk about.
Yeah. No, same. Oh, and also when I checked the live stream, somebody asked if my band Don't Stop or We'll Die is touring, and it made me realize I should announce our show.
You should.
So Saturday, April 6th at the Lodge Room.
Oh, those are the days.
2024, just so if you guys are listening to this. Don't Stop or We'll Die, my band is playing with the Sloppy Boys, a great band who we played with before. Sad to not have Townland there. Yeah. I wish we could. And then also Lamar Woods.
Oh, nice.
So we're going to have a great show, and people can get tickets for that now.
Go! It's just a great night of wine and song.
Wine and song. Not yeah. wine, women, and song, because the women, well, we have beautiful wives at home.
Yeah, that's right. There's no groupies in this getup.
That I think the music show is the one I'm least likely to ask somebody to come to, I think because of the standing.
I get it. Same. Yeah.
I mean, a special person like my wife.
Right.
Not just.
I want people who want to come to come.
Yes,
but
of course.
I'm not going to go to people and say, hey, come see this show of mine that like I know my family or anything like that.
Yeah. Where it'll be loud.
Yeah.
And we won't get to talk that much.
But on that note, I have seen you guys, and it's if ever there was a show to come stand.
Oh, that's
watch.
Nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the. We were saying we'll pick our picks.
Yeah.
But the, yeah, I mean, my only little observados, I did think if a Hannibal movie's got to have a little, it's got to be contemporary. Because I think there's a little crackle that happens when you're like, Hannibal might be this kind of like ancient evil.
Right.
He like, who. Where did he come from? When does he begin and end? And then, meanwhile, you're cutting to the stuff of like tech labs and autopsies and criminology and this, like, whatever that kind of like kinetic feeling that comes of like, this guy's just evil and there's evil people out there and they do nasty things.
And that he could be out there right now.
Yeah. And then there's the people who try to like do their best to figure out what's cooking there, but they, you know, they can't. But like just seeing it all period, it was I got to see him like walk by like, somebody has to be able to walk by like a CVS for it. Is he scary or something?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I agree.
I thought his origins were the same as all the greats of Superman and Michael Corleone. They both are like orphans who have to be pushed off their like out of their homeland. And like try to
Vito Corleone. Yeah.
Boy, yeah. So but like it's also like the trauma of losing the parent at the time. So like even with
Batman.
Yeah. With the beginning of Hannibal Rising though, it felt like we were on Krypton. Like the guy was like putting him down and there was like it was getting loud outside and people were coming like no we have to get this boy out of here you know like and then with Vito you know we got to get him on a boat, this monster's after him, he just lost his mommy, but Hannibal he went his own path, I guess. The Rice Ifans thing is a really, how do you pronounce his name?
Reese.
I like him as an actor when I see him in other stuff, but this casting is bonkaroos.
I mean, I can only assume it's the director because nobody's particularly great in this movie and it feels like the director's kind of notching it up or something. I don't know. I haven't seen The Girl with the Pearl Earring, which was really his only other movie.
Right. The Girl with the Pearl Earring, yeah.
But there is just a melodramatic tone to this that the... If the other movies ever had, it was more tongue-in-cheek, and this is just so kind of sincere and sinister that it doesn't play Po-faced. Very well.
Yeah, just like, yeah. Really, yeah. I wonder what the... Yeah. I mean, and then he started the butchers. When he killed the butcher, he did it because he said rudeness is an epidemic. So begins the eat the rude. Now...
That has nothing to do with his origin, though. That's the crazy thing. It's just like...
He doesn't like being bullied.
That's why I don't buy this origin story, because there's a refinement to Lecter that is nowhere in this movie. And yes, I guess he goes to the United States and he learns psychiatry and he learns refinement, but he loses his accent completely at some point.
That's what's missing, though. Yeah. Like the elocution school of like...
That's the charm of
Hannibal. He was brought out of the wood. Like he could have died in a cold forest in Lithuania, but somehow he like made himself this like sophisticate.
That's why I think the better origin story would have been an abusive set of parents or single parent or something, but they were incredibly cultured. So he was like having to oppress all this rage. I know it's cliche.
No.
But it's still
a Tarzan thing where he's the child of a rich and then neglected and you know, or I guess that's Batman. He's aware of his wealth, but I guess with Lecter, he's not. He's self-made.
Yeah, it's weird. It just that's why when you hear this was all sort of written under the gun from Dino De Laurentiis, it feels rushed and it feels forced.
When he did kill that butcher, we don't have to get into this because it's vile and ugly, but the butcher says like a racist, misogynist thing about the Asian woman's genitalia. I'm sure people, if they didn't watch the movie now, they can go, oh, that stupid thing that people say. What's so stupid about it, in addition to it being racist and misogynist, the idea that your genitalia would match the shape of your eyes.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. All our eyes are horizontal. None of them are vertical like vaginas. So the idea that horizontal eyes would have to match the...
Well, you've just explained racism, friend. It doesn't make any sense. You've done it.
I mean, let's put that in one more notch of why racism is stupid. It's bad because it's... Yeah. Dumb. It's racist and misogynist, but also when you're just like trying to get your mind around, I'm like, dude, go back, do your homework.
Yeah.
Math that out. Do a little problem solving before you bring that out.
That's Gong Li, who plays, I forget the character's name, but because of Brantley's notes, she's in Miami Vice, which is, you know, one of my favorite Michael Mann movies.
Yeah. And,
that's funny that they were waiting for her on this for almost a year to finish Miami Vice so she could be in this movie. They held production.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. I know. The story there was. I mean, she's good and all, but...
Yeah. The story that I wanted explored was, you know how Hannibal like does little drawings of the villains so he can remember what they look like and show
perfect,
people like...
Perfect
memories. I was thinking it'd be funny if he was actually like a caricature artist. So when he's going around showing people the drawings, like, I saw something like that. He had a big nose, not that big.
And each of them had their hobbies, like one's playing soccer, but then one's also, you know, got a the guy's SS like, cap.
He's like, wait a minute, he looks exactly like this guy I know, but he hated soccer. Yeah, I mean, you haven't played soccer, so that couldn't possibly be. And then let me look through some of the other suspects you have. Austin Powers. Tom Cruise.
Scarface.
I love when a movie, you know, just like it's a box for all evil and weird. So that, like, because they're Nazis, they also have, like, I mean, I know that there's a history of this, but it's like the jars of weird stuff.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Like, he's a mad scientist. Like, they're just cramming the every worst possible
shortcut to any of this. Yeah.
And what was going on with his death? He just put him in, like, a cold pool? Like, over and over again? He was just, like, plunging that guy in the cold water?
And spraying him with water? Yeah, I didn't get why this... It wasn't even, like, a high-pressure hose. It was just, like, a
It seems spritzer. Like you were visiting the Nickelodeon Splash Zone at the Universal Studios.
I truly don't know.
I didn't know what was so like, bad about that.
Is this supposed to be acid? But it's not. I don't...
Okay, okay. But
no, I don't think it was.
I mean, if you want to see a medical bath be used for homicide, watch Halloween 2.
Yeah.
That's the goods.
I know.
Where you can set a temperature to boil skin on people, you know, what a doctor would need that for. That's probably going to be possibly best kill, but the knife through the chin.
Yeah, I'll
and
say
then
it.
The
that's
tip
my
to
best
the head.
Kill.
Okay, that was my best kill too. Yeah. When you see stuff like that in movies, though, I think the physics are getting a little... Like, do you think somebody... Because when it goes through the chin, I feel like it would... Hit the hard palate and not come up through the skull.
I guess you could, like, if you were strong enough, you'd have to bust through 2 to 3... That top cranial layer does seem pretty thick. You'd have to break that.
And they didn't go extreme. They just had the little tip of the knife come out a little bit.
I guess you could. It would just have to be really strong.
When you said they'd have to be strong enough, that reminded me... That Sheryl Crow song, Strong Enough.
Are you strong enough to be my man?
It was originally written because she had that question after watching Hannibal
That's
Rising.
Right.
She's like, are you strong enough to jam a knife through a Nazi's head? Oh, hey, that reminds me. I should probably do a little a spoof song here, huh? Okay. Matt, any other thoughts you wanted to share on Hannibal Rising?
No, I just love that this is maybe the movie we've talked the least about of any on an episode.
I know.
That's okay.
Let me think. I mean,
no, don't force it. I actually shouldn't feel bad. There's not much to say. It's not so bad that you could discuss it a lot. It's just not good.
Yeah. And there was a point where the killing started and he's kind of moving through the different people, I thought, you know, the idea of a slasher who... No, you know what? I actually don't like it because a slasher should just kind of have this, like, non-revenge motive.
Yeah,
anytime they add that to a slasher, it messes it up.
And when they do that samurai lower mask thing so as to, like, hearken forward to his captive mask, which also was a reshoot, so it felt like, oh, we got to put more... tie-ins.
Ephemera.
There
were two things like that in this movie where I was like, this movie's dumb because they're referencing things that haven't happened yet and the person didn't at the time know. Like, the mask thing was. I was like, well, they put that mask on him in Silence of the Lambs. This is just him putting a mask on himself.
Pure coincidence.
And he's just doing it because he likes the look, whereas they're doing it is to protect him. Like,
and he can't even see it.
Yeah. Right. He's like, give me the mirror. Oh, it does match the one I put on when I was a kid. And then the opening scenes of the forest with the, like, wild boars running around. I guess that you could say that's a reference to the Gary Oldman thing, you know, or the it's being pulled from that same thing. But I'm like, but that was Gary Oldman's choice to have those boars. He didn't know that was like a Lithuanian boar that Hannibal grew up with.
There was no, like, location twist. Like the hand or anything in this one, right?
So we
lost that.
Yeah, if we had a checklist of what things need, good cinematography did that.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, it didn't have a twisty.
Yeah. And it wasn't good.
It wasn't.
Let's hear your song.
Okay.
This will help.
Oh, it will definitely help. Okay, so this is Umar Dinna, trustee. He suggested this.
Really?
Oh. I see a Hannibal arising. I see trouble in a week.
What?
In a week? I see earthquakes and lightning. I see Ryan Ifans.
Reese Evans. I see rhinitis.
That's the spoof.
Oh,
no,
God.
But Umar was like, hey, so can we expect a Bad Moon Rising spoof? I was like, hey, buddy, thanks for helping me out. Yeah. So credit to Umar. Oh,
God bless you in your run of those. I hope we have many more in the future.
Oh, we'll see.
Do you want to read some Xenos?
Yeah, let's do it. Boom, 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 boom. These are the Xenos who signed for the level.
Sudden lawyer here to say, Chris, you get a shout out and a guilty verdict for your daughter, Regan, and your wife, Catherine.
Oh. That's Chris Andrew. All right. Chris Andrew with daughter, Regan, and Catherine. Ooh, this person pronounced their name Vitsa, and their name is Zach Vitsa. We haven't done Cape Fear, Zach, but that could be a good
that
original.
That was close a
yeah.
couple times.
Yeah, yeah, it's
Yuppie
come very
nightmare.
Close.
Yeah, I bet we get to that at some point.
Ooh, Martin Scorsese could be good.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that, Shutter Island, and, Color of Money, but we're dressed as vampires while we watch it.
We should have saved After Hours, and you could maybe put Taxi Driver in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Last Temptation of Christ.
No. Silence.
Oh, hey, I'm back. I took a short recess to go play recess and take a drink out of an old play school bubbler. Wait, what? Oh, okay, hold on. I'm reading Johnny A. Miller, my little
Johnny Miller.
Client, but there's someone here prosecuting my little client. It is I, Samuel Loomis. I say he's guilty. Evil eyes, dead eyes. Oh, my little Johnny A. Miller. He doesn't have eyes like we do. He has little Margaret Keene eyes. He's innocent.
He asked a question there, too. He was like, hey, do you guys ever have, when you rewatch something, a new realization after having watched it? Because in The Thing, he noticed something about Blair.
Yeah.
This isn't my own, but somebody pointed out in Back to the Future Part 3, when Marty McFly wakes up in bed, he, like, very subtly, like, looks under the covers first to see if he has pants on, and then gets up, because in the first two movies, he wakes up without pants on.
Oh, so, my God.
Hey, there's always something to be found.
Hello, I'm back. And I want to shout out to Nathan Tolley.
Nathan Tolley.
He's not Smalley. He's Tolley.
Yeah, and we love you, Nathan.
We love you so much. Come stay the night sometime when you're not in jail. We'll see how this trial goes. Hi, I'm H.R.W. Giger, and I'm Ian Fleming, don't you see? And we are here to pump you up. Also to say, Alex Zuko, you are our shout-out of the day.
I want a buddy cop with those two. Buddy cop movie with those two.
Oh, and finally, let me bring it home with another shout-out to... two mediocre white dudes on film as part of the PLD Project Network of Podcasts.
Right.
That's a funny name for a fella. But okay. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service.
I'm just going to look over here at the live screen, say hello to you guys after we read those names. Yeah, getting ready for that mishmash slasher bash season. Cooking it up right now.
Okay. I'm excited. Now, how hard was this, Paul, for you to winnow down to a short list to make your final three choices? I certainly could do another season of these and have some top picks left.
Yes, I agree. For me, it was the challenge of the balancing the classics
yeah.
and the ones I've wanted to see, and the Obscuros but Greats.
That's good. I have to say, I think I went one like, not classic, I guess it could be kind of classic, but like one so soundly in the slasher tropes, one cred classic, and one outlier.
Hey, okay, that's great.
But I do have
a who knows, we might have picked the same one, so then we have to go into our big barrel.
This is always one of my favorite parts on the podcast when we get to reveal our picks. So do you want to go first or me, or do we want to draw straws?
Ooh.
Or,
I'll go first.
Okay, I'm excited. Oh boy. Now did you look at a list?
I did.
Yeah, me too.
I looked at a list, and I've kept my own little list of just ones that I've wanted to see too.
Me too,
and then brought that up as well. So this first one I've seen before. This one is in the classic territory.
Okay.
It's one of the big guys. Is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Whoa!
Yeah, all right, baby. Wow. Okay.
I considered that, but I didn't know if we'd do a season of that.
I know. So. But I was like, hey, let's just, if somebody's a fan, a slasher fan, let's give them what they want.
Okay, yeah.
And if we want to come back to part two, we can.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. My first one, with the Scream Queen herself, we know her from Halloween and Terror Train. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Prom Night.
Yes, buddy. All right. I've never seen it.
Me either. I haven't seen any of my picks, once again.
I've seen Prom Night 2, Hello, Mary Lou.
Oh, interesting.
Which I think is like one of those after sequel. Like they made it and then they bought the rights to the Prom Night title and then put it on.
Oh, it wasn't even related?
Yeah, I think it might be one of those.
Interesting.
Only things I've seen at Prom Night is like a disco scene. So that's pretty cool.
I watched the trailers because I whittled mine down to about 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. And then I watched the trailers and, you know, quickly some were like, no. But then some.
Yeah. But that's good start. And we'll probably watch these picking them out, right? What do you think we'll do? We'll have the titles in a bag and we draw them out one by one?
That sounds good.
Okay. Now, this second one.
Yeah.
My second choice, the third overall, is a hidden gem. I've seen it. It's great. And I want to share it with others.
Give me a hint.
It's directed by a Friday the 13th director.
Okay.
The beloved part 4, Friday the 13th, the final chapter. This guy.
What year is this movie from?
This movie is this year. It's 1982, movie, or 81. So it's before Friday the 13th part 4.
I bet you this is on my short list, if not on my list.
Ooh. The Prowler.
Yes, it's on my short list.
Hey, all right.
I didn't make it to the top, but that was if we were going to do 4, or if I had to choose an alternate, The Prowler is on there. I'm so excited about that.
That's good.
It's a World War II veteran slasher movie.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's like one of those that you hope a slasher will be, which is boatloads of atmosphere. Just like that hazy, the atmosphere is the thing you most need in a slasher. People mix that up, Matt.
No.
But it's the atmosphere that's the most important. And then brutal, like Tom Savini kills.
Yeah, and he's even in it.
Yeah.
You said you had seen this.
Yes,
I've never seen it.
And when I saw it, it was one of those like, hey, you got to see this. I've watched some of those. Hey, this is a hidden gem. You got to see this before. And I've been like, it's a little overhyped. With The Prowler, it was one of the few times where I watched one of those and I was like, oh, that was great. So now I'm hyping it up.
And I've seen a picture of the killer who's wearing, you know, a World War II pot helmet. And what I believe to be just multiple layers of fatigue facial covering so as to almost look grotesque. But when you really look at it, it's just layers of cloth.
Yeah, something the cloth's like almost kind of like the shape looks a little like Lord Helmet from Spaceballs.
Yeah.
Like it's not the most like,
it's very interesting. Okay.
Okay, so the fourth pick overall, your second pick.
is a classic,
ooh,
but not one that comes up outside of like horror aficionados.
Okay, okay.
It's one I've never seen. It's one I've, it's all long been on my list because it also takes place at a camp, which I think is always going to do you right.
Ooh.
Any guesses?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Birdie?
Yes.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I have. Yeah. Now we got two Savinis in a row.
Oh, that's right.
Two Savini post Friday the 13th. So Savini makes his name with Dawn of the Dead and Friday the 13th. These slashers, the Prowler and the Burning, they go, what are we get? Come on. What are we doing here? We got to just get Tom Savini. That's the whole point of these things. And they got him.
Yeah.
So that's great. That's great. And you know that cast is stacked, right?
Who's in it?
Holly Hunter.
That's right.
Jason Alexander.
Yes.
Fisher Stevens.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let's just see how the trustees are.
You guys liking these picks so far?
Yeah. Solid picks so far, they say.
Yeah.
Yes.
Summer camp is good too.
I know. I mean, I even quickly considered a sequel to Sleepaway Camp. I just wanted to go back to camp, you know.
Definitely everybody wants to get back to camp. And the style is going to be so good. Clothes, the hair.
Forget it.
So, this is my third pick.
Uh-huh.
The fifth overall. Now, I got it down to two.
Two.
Is it that like Jiminy Glick? Now I got it down to two. What titles do I have down to two? Okay, so they're both, I'm deciding here, they're both classics, not the pedigree of even Leatherface Texas Chainsaw, but up there has been probably mentioned on this podcast one or two times, both of these titles.
Do you want to say them before you choose? I could also throw you two and you could pick mine and I could pick yours if that's easier. We don't have to do that.
Ooh.
Like if you feel like you want to curate your own list, I 100%
I mean, The Burning was on my list, just so you know.
Oh, really?
Not of the three. I'm just saying of the like, ooh, I really want to watch
this.
Yeah,
same with The Prowler on mine. Yeah.
Well, one of these movies I'd probably rather watch more than the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll pick the one I'd rather watch more.
Sounds good.
Candyman.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, that's right.
We've never done Candyman on
No.
Why was I thinking we had? Oh, good. Then it's about time.
Yeah.
Wow. Very nice. What was the other one?
The other one was Hellraiser.
Oh. I'm glad you chose Candyman.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I always remember the disappointment of Hellraiser when you only get those guys for like a number of minutes.
Yeah, and
but I also don't remember
they're
the
gross
movie. But at some point we should do that.
Yeah.
Because who is the most notorious member of Pinhead's Court?
Butterball is the most nefarious member of Pinhead's Court.
Oh, good.
That's good stuff. So we got one left. Did I tell you what has been my newest ASMR?
What?
It's similar to my friend Mike Mitchell was the one who heard the Butterball is the most nefarious member of Pinhead's Court because he was watching Hellraiser videos. My kind of watching Hellraiser videos recently has been somebody explaining what the different drafts, unproduced drafts of Alien 3 were.
Oh, yes. You did say this.
Oh, I did.
Well, you said you were listening to that.
Yeah. Very comforting. I said that last week. Oh, my God.
No, I don't think you mentioned it as ASMR.
Oh, did I
though.
Say it on a mailbag, maybe?
Maybe. Or you might have just told me. I can't remember.
Slipping.
All right. Mine's a bit of a, I will not call it a cheat. I'll call it an outlier because we've discussed it before.
Oh.
And we've discussed it as a possibility of a movie we're covering, though it definitely crosses genre into the cop genre. Uh-huh. 10 to Midnight.
Yes! You're doing 10 to Midnight. Yes, yeah. Buddy. All right. Well, a great group of six movies.
So let's recap. Your three are
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. the Prowler, and Candyman.
I'm doing Prom Night, The Burning, and 10 to Midnight.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about any of your other shortlisters?
Sure.
Mine was The Prowler. Also, Intruder was really
was on my list.
Close.
Yep.
I Know What You Did Last Summer was up there for
me. That was on my list too, buddy.
Alice, Sweet Alice, mm-hmm. Maniac, and Looker.
Looker,
but I
yeah.
think Looker and 10 to Midnight would have been too many little, like, they're really more cop thrillers.
Yes.
That just happen to deal with serial killers.
Yeah, but. Yeah, yeah. It's funny because Alice, I haven't seen. I have seen Maniac, and it is such a gross movie. That's a Tom Savini
yeah.
thing, too, but it's
I
like
also
one
think
of those...
I got it spoiled in the trailer, and I kind of was like, okay, I feel like I've seen it.
It'd be a little like Hannibal Rising, where you're just like, wait, I'm just following a shit this whole time?
I know, and I think I like it more for that video cassette cover that I saw for years and years and years.
Yeah. I mean, that poster is wild. That guy has like a bulge in his jeans in the Maniac poster.
Yeah. And who is it? Lou Spinelli? Is that who plays the maniac from Godfather
2? Joe
Spinelli? Yeah.
And Joe Spinelli is in the that video when Spielberg finds out he wasn't nominated for Best Director for Jaws. Have you ever seen
oh,
that?
Oh, no.
A film student was there recording it, and it's a one would watch it now to see it as a sweet thing that this guy was on top of the world and then had to like suffer this in front of people. But if you love Spielberg, it's not the funnest video to watch because you feel sad for him.
Yeah.
But it's cute. He's got like, he's so young. He has like little pimples. And
who,
stuff.
Spielberg?
Spielberg
oh
in the video.
Oh my God.
And he's like, there's a part where he's watching the thing and they're announcing best directors. And they get to the fifth one. He goes, he does the thing. He doesn't break his view from the screen and he keeps his face on his hands and he goes, oh, I didn't get it. Oh. I didn't get it. Like, he has to have some levity in his voice to make it, but it's a tough watch. But Joe Spinelli's there, probably coked out of his mind at like 9 a.m. and he's like wearing one of those, he's with a guy who's wearing one of those fake tuxedo shirts that look like a tuxedo.
Jesus.
And
oh God,
the best line of the video is Joe Spinelli goes, well, they didn't direct the director of the movie. Who directed the movie? The Shock?
Were they friends?
I guess. It seems more like these guys see a golden boy. They want to be around the golden boy. Golden boy's okay with having them around.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I gotta watch that.
But, yeah.
What were your shortlisters?
Oh, my shortlisters were, and the live stream, you guys all happy? You guys
seems like
cool?
It.
Yeah. This I just want the listeners to be happy, Matt.
Oh, we got to give Rising a score. You're right.
Oh, right. Rise. So the ones I have on my list, Peeping Tom.
Oh, yeah.
Deep Red, but that ooh. Felt like, ooh, Italian.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I had a couple like Tenebre and... I forget the other one. Bay of Blood.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I consider, but we really should do a Giallo season.
Yeah. Or a Euro flavored one. Yeah. We'll call it Epcot slashers because you go to different countries.
Well, that's a great idea. Oh my God.
Now, Maniac on my list, like you, buddy. Yeah. The Burning on my list, like you, buddy. I had Slumber Party Massacre.
I watched the trailer, but ultimately was like,
I've seen it before. It's not my
didn't
fave.
Make the cut. Yeah.
I
also had House of on Sorority Row.
Ooh, I didn't have that one. Curtains?
Oh, that's the other Jamie Lee Curtis one. Is it?
No, sorry, it's Curtains, not Curtis.
Oh, sorry.
She's only in movies with her last name.
Is that not Jamie Lee Curtis?
Jamie Lee Curtains. No.
Why do I know that movie then?
The Dean Wormer is in Curtains. From Animal House.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
Both a close personal friend of John Landis. Intruder.
Yeah.
Like you said, I Know What You Did Last Summer, like you said. So a lot of great minds think alike, my friend. And then the last two were the more modern ones. High Tension, which is Hot Tension. It's like a French movie.
Oh, I don't think I know that one.
And the guy who directed like the Piranha movies and stuff. The Hills Have Eyes remake.
Oh, right.
He did it, and it's a scary little session. And then You're Next.
Yeah, I considered that too. I like that movie, yeah.
You're Next could fit in a good, if we do Contempo Classics.
Yeah.
Because then we could get like a... that and It Follows and
Hereditary.
Yeah,
that'd be a good season. Boy, not any sign of shortage of season ideas.
I know, and it's funny because the movies that seem to be made now, you know, used to be superhero movies and horror movies.
Yeah.
Now the superhero movies are dropping off, and now it's just...
It's time.
Just the horror ones.
So we could pick out of a hat. We could also go chronologically... What would that be? What would the list be?
That would
What's
be
the first one.
Texas Chainsaw, I think, is 73.
Okay, right? Yeah, that'd be first, right?
And then what's next on your list? I think yours
would be either The Burning, Prom Night, or 10 to Midnight. They're so all early 80s.
Prom Night is the first of those three.
God, how do you know all this? That's amazing.
No. I don't think it's amazing.
Here they are.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
It goes Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Thank You, Umar, Prom Night, The Prowler, The Burning, 10 to Midnight, Candyman.
Beautiful. And for those of you, we have discussed 10 to Midnight. I am so stoked because I was just describing it to somebody last week with excitement. I was like, you gotta see 10 to Midnight. If you like Charles Bronson and you haven't seen it.
It's the first appearance of Chuck Bronson on the podcast, right?
That's right. Yeah. I brought it up because I was in a green room for a comedy show I was doing. A Bug Man. He's the best. He's so funny. He does this show. And people backstage were doing impressions of...
Chuck Bronson, Simpsons version.
So now should we rate this Hannibal Rises?
Yeah. So do you want to go chronologically? We could also pick out through a hat.
I'm cool with whatever.
Let's pick.
Okay, great.
Because there's nothing trope-wise in this that I think...
Right.
We know the tropes of the slasher and stuff like that. So.
Yeah.
All right, let's give our rating while I'm making up a list.
Yes, 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 yes.
Just a sec.
So my rating on a scale of 1 to 13 Lecters.
On the Lecter scale.
Oh my gosh, the Lecter scale.
Why did we not
call the whole
season?
We're in the last few minutes of this whole series and we could have used the Lecter scale the whole time.
We both gave Silence 13, Hannibal 5s, which seems a little harsh compared to this movie now. Red Dragon, I gave it a 10.5. You gave it a 9. I forgot Manhunter. Manhunter. We both... I gave it a 9. You gave it a... No, you gave it a 9. I gave it a 10.
Ooh.
Is that right?
God, what's the lowest rating we've ever given a movie?
I think
probably
I
Halloween
gave,
2.
Didn't I give a zombie a 0?
Zombie 0.
Zombie 0.
Well, I'm going to get pretty close to a zombie 0 here,
man. Yeah.
I think a 2.
2 from Paul. I'll do a 3.
I think I need to save the lower ones for ones that are like, morally repugnant.
Yeah.
And I don't think this one was morally repugnant.
I agree. It was close.
And do you think that's the biggest? No, I vacillate or whatever between with the Halloween ones. I'm sure the first one got a 13, and then by the time the zombie one's around, just seeing the like wavelengths of the drop offs between the ratings.
Oh yeah,
like the curves and stuff. Like Scream would stay a high, steady wave, and then the others are like roller coasters. Now, Matt, have you? I was just asking, have you heard the new Scream news?
No, what?
So
I heard that like they lost all the actors.
Yeah.
Is that the news?
No, so yesterday was announced that Kevin Williamson is coming back to write and direct the script, and Neve Campbell's coming back. So the solution might have been, we'll do a Scream 7 without these actors. It's a little, remains to be seen. I'd like to think the actors can all figure it out now and everybody comes back for Scream 7, but who knows if they'll skip the group that was like the core four, remember in the last one?
Yeah, and I'd be okay.
They'll come back. And if this is just Neve out and about at home, I don't know.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Okay, do you want to do the honors?
If it wasn't even a horror movie, it was just like a domestic drama, like in the bedroom. Okay, yeah, I'll do the honors. Picking the first. The first one we will watch is Prowler.
Oh, yeah.
The Prowler.
Oh, I'm excited. Okay, we'll update you trustees on Patreon when we're coming back. You know how it is. We take a couple few weeks off and then we'll be back. But we got a real good commentary coming up with Friday the 13th. And then the month after, we're going to do the triple immersion.
Yes.
Friday Halloween Nightmare.
Yes.
Commentary.
The beat for beat.
And then I think in April, we'll also have a cozy one or the others up too, probably.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So stay tuned there.
All right.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, y'all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
For more Gorley and Rust content, head over to patreon.com/withGorleyandRust to get episodes ad-free and a whole week early. Plus, monthly mailbag episodes and feature-length watch-along film commentaries of your favorite horror classics. That's patreon.com/withGorleyandRust. Email us at withGorleyandRust@gmail.com, and your questions might be featured on a future mailbag episode. With Gorley and Rust theme song by me, Matt Wood, and performed by Townland. You can find us on Instagram as Townland Band, as well as Paul's fantastic band at Don't Stop or We'll Die. And why not rate and review with Gorley and Rust on Apple Podcasts? It'll help us grow the show and keep us trucking through the Jasons and the Michaels, the Leatherfaces and the Chuckies, the Aliens and the Candymans.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.